Welcome to Pod to the Rescue, a podcast from Summit Dog Rescue in Boulder, Colorado.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Libby.
We're both professional dog trainers with multiple certifications in dog training and behavior. Together, we have more than two decades of experience in dog rescue.
We want to share everything we've learned along the way with other folks involved in dog rescue, sheltering, fostering, and adoption, and anyone who just loves dogs.
Rescuing the dog is just the first step.
We're here to help with everything that comes next. Hello, listeners, and welcome back to Pod to the Rescue. I'm Libby.
And I'm Emily.
And today we are thrilled to bring you the first of a two-part interview with Sarah Strumming of the Cognitive Canine and Cog Dog Radio.
This is something we've been wanting to do for a long time, is have adolescents covered on the podcast. It's so important, as you'll hear in this two-part series, because so many of the dogs that come into rescue and are needing rescue are adolescents.
Yeah, and there are some very specific reasons for that, which you'll hear us talk about in this episode and both of these episodes. And not only do we explain why adolescence can be such a challenging time period for dogs and their people, but some things that you can do about it to help your dog fit into our human world while they're going through these big changes.
And how you can support a foster or just have a greater understanding. So we hope you enjoy this episode as much as we love talking to Sarah.
Sarah Strumming is passionate about helping dogs and their people. She's a certified dog behavior consultant with nearly two decades in the field of dog training and behavior and 25 years competing in dog sports. Sarah has a Bachelor of Science degree in psychology from Colorado State University and diligently attends conferences and other educational events every year. She has also done the dirt time with dogs and their people in multiple professional capacities, including daycares, boarding kennels, veterinary clinics, and shelters. For her first decade in dog training, she taught dozens of dogs and handlers each week in group classes, and over time developed her programs and streamlined them to fit the clientele she now serves. When Sarah is not working, she is usually deep in the woods in the Pacific Northwest behind her border collies and Icelandic sheepdog. And in the show notes, we're going to link to Sarah's course, Teenage Tyrants, as well as some other resources to help you further understand adolescence in dogs.
We really think better understanding of adolescence could save so many dogs.
Absolutely. Enjoy. Sarah Strumming, welcome to Pod to the Rescue.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're so excited to have you here. You've been someone we've wanted to talk to since the beginning of Pod to the Rescue.
Well, I'm equally excited to be here. It's going to be a great chat.
So let's just jump right in by defining canine adolescence. What is canine adolescence? Why is it so important for dog guardians and people in rescue to understand this?
So adolescence is a transitional phase. It's a transition from puppyhood to adulthood, if we're talking about dogs. And there is a physical transition. They're literally physically growing. There's also a mental transition. And then if the dogs have their sex hormones intact, there's also a transition kind of into sexual maturity. And that is a whole other exciting, fun thing to go through if your dog was not kind of pediatrically spayed or neutered, which I know, you know, being kind of a rescue focused podcast, a lot of the dogs that people are going to have in their homes that are listening to this were pediatrically spayed or neutered. And so some of those things might not apply. But adolescence happens with or without those hormones. It's just that with those hormones, there are a few other things to expect that you want to be aware of.
Yeah, that's a great point about the spay and neuter. I mean, it's a legal requirement in most states for rescues and shelters to spay and neuter before adopting. So some of that will apply, some of it won't. So what are some behaviors that we commonly see emerge during adolescence?
So rather than thinking of it as behaviors, I like to think of it as the dog's responses to their environment, responses to their caregiver, And a lot of their social responses changing. So responses to other dogs, responses to people that they don't know. Like I said, it's a transitional period. And so in that transitional period, they're kind of just like humans go through adolescence and kind of figure out who they are and what they're going to do socially. And they might do weird things. I certainly never did. It's they're kind of feeling out like, who am I in this world? They think they know everything, but they know nothing. And so rather than like specific behaviors, I think the umbrella of they're figuring it out, they are testing things they've learned so far. They're testing things they've never done before. I like to think of it like that. And then also for sure, I'm not a neuroscientist and I don't want to play one on TV, but there are neurochemical things going on. There's neurobiological things going on that lead them to more risk-taking, that lead them to higher impulsivity. They cannot control themselves on the same level that an adult can control themselves. And so those, I think that's where a lot of the challenge lies, that if you think about, they're learning how to live and be in the world and function, and they also can't control their damn selves. This is where we have problems. Yeah. This is where the problems start to come from.
Yeah, we see the majority of dogs that we're asked to take are adolescents. And I think that everybody wants to get a puppy. You never hear someone say, I want to go get an adolescent this weekend. You know, they're always like puppies. And then I also think people don't understand how long this lasts, that this isn't just like a 3-week period. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I wish it was a 3-week period. yeah, no, nobody wants an adolescent dog on purpose. People like to get a puppy because a puppy is adorable, and puppies are very challenging in their own ways, but everybody kind of knows it'll end when they're puppies. You know, like the sleepless nights end, the potty training accidents end, like everything keeps moving forward really quickly when they're puppies. And then you hit adolescence, you hit about 5-ish months of age, and now you're in it. And technically you're not out of it until they're well past age 3. I think there are probably big differences in breeds as far as when that window kind of closes, like when the adolescence is over. I don't think we have good research on that. That's more anecdotal from my end. But I start to see what I think of as adolescent behaviors anywhere around between like 5 and 7 months of age, starting to have their kind of onset. And then I don't really start to feel like I see the light at the end of the tunnel until the dog is over 2 years of age. And then when they turn 4 or 5, I look back and I'm like, oh yeah, like you were still really changing and growing until you're like 3.5 or 4. Again, a little bit breed dependent. Like I would say my Icelandic sheepdog matured faster than my border collies do, but my border collies mature faster than most folks that I know with like retrievers. And so it's gonna vary, but like, yeah, you're in it for a long time. And you're not necessarily in it with like capital A adolescence, and it's really, really hard that entire time. I find the 6 to 9 month range really, really challenging. And then I find that it gets a little bit better around 12 months. Like it starts to go uphill around there. But again, that also depends on if the dog is intact or not, and if we're talking about sexual maturity in addition to other kinds of maturity. So it varies, but it does last way longer than anybody wants it to last.
For sure. It's so hard. I'd say if you had to be like, what is the number one age you see people asking you to take dogs? It's 8 to 9 months, because now you have a very large dog, you know, like it's no longer cute and snuggly. And what we've seen is, you know, lack of impulsivity. So if you didn't do a lot of work during puppyhood, now you have an adolescent and they're almost primed to be more independent and be more like, I am going to blow you off, just like a human teenager. Like they're leaving the nest, so to speak. Like if if they were out in the real world, they would be like moving away from their family group in order to procreate with someone besides their siblings.
Yeah, it's, I do think, oh man, the language you use, like that's going to resonate with so many people because people are like, this thing is blowing me off. Like 5 months, like 2 months ago, my puppy went out and it potty in the backyard and then it came back in and everything was great. And now my puppy is 6 months old. I cannot get her to come inside from outside. That's a super common one in my world is dogs that are like, no, I'm having a good time out here. Like I'm not interested in coming in. Or you think your puppy has a perfect recall. That's the cutest. Everybody thinks their puppy has a really nice recall. That's because puppies have kind of a natural inclination to recall. And then they start to hit adolescence. And now you go, oh, well, now you're just not listening. And the way I like to reframe that is that they're showing you how good the reinforcement history is. And usually it's not good enough to be perfect through this really tough period. Not that it's ever perfect, but yeah, those things where basically puppies are designed to kind of look to us for safety. Like we kind of come in as a surrogate parent type of figure. Like we take them away from their parent. They wouldn't have left their parent as early as we take them away. And so we kind of become that surrogate parent. They look to us for safety. They stop looking to us for safety as they get into adolescence, because like I said, they think they know everything, but they don't. And then also they're more impulsive, more fearful. And so they go out, they're like, I got this. And then something scares them inevitably. and then you see all kinds of behaviors that come out from that fear. And I think that this is when I hear people start to label their dogs reactive, is in this age range. And in reality, like a lot of what I think of as the behaviors we label reactivity probably started as really normal adolescent responses to the world that were just not handled appropriately, or were not handled at all. Or you've got some poor innocent person who is walking their dog down the road, down in their neighborhood. This dog has done this every single day since they got them at 10 weeks of age. And now their puppy's 7 months old, their puppy sees a car and their puppy's like, well, that's going to kill me for sure. Hits the end of the leash, barking and lunging at the car. And now they're like, oh my God, this is a huge problem. And if that's not addressed with some really specific interventions, one of the biggest ones being don't put that puppy in that situation again, it snowballs into such another thing. And fill in the blank with car. It can be the neighbor's dog charges the fence and barks. It can be the neighbor's kids run out of the garage and they're screaming and being loud and scary. It can, you know, fill in the blank. But
yeah,
a very normal adolescent response is to scream at something that is scary, versus a lot of puppies don't scream at stuff. A lot of puppies shrink back. A lot of puppies, again, look to us for safety. They hit that adolescent age range. They're no longer looking to us for safety. They're taking matters into their own hands, and they're doing so with these behaviors that we label reactive or aggressive. And then, yeah, you're going to get dogs. People go, I'm in over my head. I'm going to surrender this dog. A really unfortunate thing that happens way too often is they do hire a trainer, but the trainer doesn't do the best job in the world, and then things are still bad. You know, there a lot of things can go wrong in this phase. So it is just, it's really, really tough. And it's so important for people to keep in mind that it is actually a transitional phase. What they need is support. They're having a hard time.
Yeah.
And I have a 9-month-old border collie puppy right now. Like I am in it. Okay. It's hard. And in theory, know what I'm doing. It's still really hard.
Yeah, I bet. There's a quote, your dog is not giving you a hard time, they're having a hard time. I think that would be really helpful for us all to like tattoo on our arms before we have an adolescent dog. Yeah. And as I'm thinking about it, like the importance of us understanding this developmental period is that if these dogs are surrendered into the shelters, they with these reactivity issues that came up because they're in adolescence, they're very difficult to adopt and potentially will be euthanized because of these behaviors. We're working with a dog right now who is overstimulated when he sees dogs, and he's like 2 years old. And, you know, so it's like, this isn't just like how to teach your dog to sit. This is almost like a survival podcast episode, because it's like how to prep for it, what it is, and what to do when you're in it. Like if you get an 8-month-old foster and you're walking them, like there's got to be things we can do so that we don't wait until they're spooking at the car and barking and lunging, right?
Yeah. And I think it's this really unfortunate just reality that most of the dogs that are surrendered to rescues and shelters are in this age range. And the age range that is arguably the least equipped to deal with that kind of life change is this age range. And so they suffer the most from it. You know, arguably puppies are not equipped either for it, but puppies so rarely stay in those situations for any serious length of time, because puppies get snatched up immediately. It's what everybody wants. So if you've got, let's say, a 9-month-old dog that's having some barky, lungy behaviors that you're fostering, your biggest job is to avoid situations that the dog has told you loud and clear he cannot handle. What we do instead is we go, I have to fix it. And I need to fix it by being in this situation. And it's fine, because I'm going to click and treat and I'm going to be feeding the whole time. And it's not fine. Them repeatedly experiencing that huge spike in, you know, arousal and stress hormones and yuckiness again and again and again is not only bad for their future behavior, but it's bad for their behavior overall. So what I want to give 9-month-olds, you know, 8-month-olds, this whole age range, what I want to give them is decompression type activities, lots of peace, lots of trust, lots of like trusting activities where I just prove to them that I have good ideas rather than me marching them down the street like that's a good idea, when they're going to see 7 different monsters on this walk, but it's cool because they're going to recover and I'm going to feed them. That's not me having good ideas. So silly little games that show them you have good ideas. Like I have a game that I teach in my course on this, where I literally have you hide something. Like you're out in a walk, maybe you're even in your backyard, but you're outside with the dog somewhere and you hide something and you show it to them. And you're like, hey, look, and you're like pointing and you're like digging at it and you're like, check it out. And they come over and they're all curious. And then they find this thing, like a rabbit skin or, you know, any other kind of thing that the dog might like, a toilet paper roll, whatever, like cool stuff that dogs like. And then you kind of like celebrate in it and you don't try to take it for them. And then they get to have the prize and like you found it, but they got to have like stupid little moments like that build this relationship where they go, yeah, this person does have good ideas. Like I maybe they do know stuff I don't know. And the way that you handle it when they are freaking out about something also helps them to decide whether or not you have good ideas. And if the way that you handle it is, I don't know, trying to capture the one moment where they stop screaming with a click and a treat, they're still freaking out that whole time. So for me, I look at kind of what are they doing? What are they trying to seek out? Like it's a, you know, very quick in the moment assessment of, are they trying to get away? Is getting away what they want? And if so, I'm going to facilitate that. That is the only thing for me to do, is to facilitate it. If they're screaming at something that's going to go away in 2 seconds anyway, like it's a car, that's just a moment to go, okay, well, this was a dumb idea. I'm going to go home. I'm not walking this dog on the road again. How much time do we have? Cause I could talk for like 4 hours, because also the problem of don't expose them becoming, well, now they haven't left the four walls of this house for 6 months. That's also a problem. And we do that to them all the time. The recommendation of, this dog's just having a bad time right now. Don't leave. Don't go anywhere. Not a great recommendation. Doing the work of perhaps loading the dog in the car and taking the dog to a more appropriate place to have an outing is better. And if you can only do that once a week, do that once a week. And the other 6 days of the week, he doesn't need to leave the house. You can do the enrichment games and those sorts of things inside the house. So it's a really fine line between giving them life experiences that they need and avoiding life experiences that are traumatic or that build them up to have poor behaviors in the future. And honestly, it takes an immense amount of skill to do it well in the moment. So if you feel like you're struggling, that's fair. It's really tough. This puppy that I have right now, she's a lovely, lovely puppy. And also, she requires all of the skill that I've acquired over the last like 20 years of doing this professionally. It's, you know, no wonder somebody who is kind of raising an adolescent for the first time, or they're raising a challenging adolescent for the first time, is having a hard time. It is hard because it's these moment to moment decisions. But building kind of highly enriching, decompressing activities that are not, that don't have any kind of risk of the dog popping off or having a major reaction is a big, big deal. So like, I love, if you're going to enroll in a class, like enroll in a nose work class where the dogs wait in the car and they come out one at a time and everything is set up to be very reactive dog friendly in nose work landia. Like it just really is. And so adolescent dogs, that's such a wonderful thing for them to experience. Now they are getting in the car and going to a new place. They are seeing people. They are experiencing other dogs. They're just experiencing other dogs at a tolerable, handleable level. All of that is really good stuff versus I'm going to enroll in, you know, traditional pet dog training class where we're all, there's 12 of us shoved in a room and we're all marching around with these dogs. Like that's not going to look as good as the nose work class.
That's so interesting because, you know, you are the person who originated the idea of the decompression walk. And what I'm hearing when you're talking about this is these adolescent dogs are primed to explore. So let's give them safe places to do what they naturally want to do. Can you talk about what your decompression walk really is? I mean, you kind of touched upon it.
Yeah. So decompression kind of in and of itself, it can be, it is literally just as it sounds. It's like releasing all of the normal stressors of the day. And when you're in an adolescent period, you have more stressors in your day, just point blank. It's harder for you to live like that. And so you need to have high, high decompression needs. The decompression walk for me is a walk that is done preferably off leash, but definitely in nature, as free from kind of triggers as possible. If we can't be off leash, a long line and a harness can work. The long line and the harness will fail if the dog's movement needs themselves have not been satiated. So if the dog, you know, if this is an adolescent German short hair pointer and you, the only exercise this dog is getting is you try to take it out on a long line and a harness, neither of you are going to have a good time. because that's the kind of dog that needs to run on the treadmill before he can do yoga. Okay. And I'm not saying dogs do treadmill or yoga necessarily. Those are not what I'm recommending, but that's what he needs. And so with these young dogs, getting them out and letting them be exploratory in nature, because I think that's really vital for all dogs. I think all dogs need it. I think that it's good for us too. And I think it's just something we forgot to do in our society. It's such a big deal. Like the fact that my puppy's 9 months means that I'm spending more money on SniffSpot right now than I normally do. And SniffSpot being the app where you can rent off-leash spaces that then, because you rented it, it's only yours for that period of time and you're not going to run into anything. I normally take my dogs to, I'm really lucky to have access to some private forest land that they can walk off leash on, but a lot of other people have access to it. So it is, you know, there's equestrians and there's off leash dogs and there might be kids on bikes and there, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff happening. And so I'm really trying to curate her experiences. And so I'm going to lean towards the sniff spot, especially if I would like to just be outside and enjoy myself today, because it's just this constant juggling act. But if you can access off leash spaces in nature for these dogs, there really is nothing better for them. I don't know how people survive them without it. They are so much more balanced kind of in their mind when they get to go out and do that stuff. But if it seems like it's not working for you, like you're trying it, but the dog is just running the entire time, hunting, maybe getting frantic, that is where you want to have a look at, does this dog need some more high intensity exercise as well? Because they might actually need to get on a treadmill, or they might actually need to go swimming, and they might actually need to really, really move their body before they can even access the decompression activities. That's when things get very, very challenging for average pet owners who are, you know, adopting a dog with like maybe super high needs in this regard. What I then see is that when those needs are not met, both the decompression and the just straight up movement needs, it does come out in these reactive outbursts, and it does come out in just, they're more pent and they're more anxious and they have a harder time dealing with stuff. And it's just, you know, it's easy for me to say, it's harder for people to access, but it's amazing what happens when people realize how important it is. They kind of do make it happen then.
Mm-hmm. I would love to talk a little bit more about this balance between the decompression and protecting your dog from traumatic, scary experiences. And I would love for you to first talk a little bit more about what you said earlier, that we're getting an increase in independence as well as fear. Can you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, you phrased it really well. The fact that they have both increased independence and increased fear responses really is why they're kind of a nightmare. That's why they are so difficult. I heard some folks talking about this recently and they were like, I love adolescence, it's my favorite. And I was like, you're nuts. I was like, good for you. It is not my favorite. they have this increased kind of drive to investigate their world and learn things about their world. And also they have, certainly varies by individual, but they also do have a heightened kind of fear response. And we see that they make up their mind about stuff really fast. In this phase, like they're kind of less malleable in that way. Like they will have one bad experience and then they'll go, well, for the rest of forever, you know, black Labrador shaped dogs are a problem for me. And it can be kind of hard to talk them out of it. And don't let that like scare you, because also they forget stuff at this age. So if you also shelf it, make sure that doesn't happen again. Build the other skills, it does turn out okay in a different sense than some other, in a different sense than a traumatic episode might affect a different age. So, and you can get somebody smarter than me to talk about all the specifics of how the brain develops and all of that business. But so reconciling this fact that they want to be out there, they want to be exploring, and they're going to get scared of stuff, for me, is a lot about the person curating the experience as best as possible to be sure that it is actually safe, or as safe as can be, and then letting them do their exploration, really backing off and letting them learn. I start this really, really young. I call it bravery school. I am always setting up experiences where I know that kind of quote unquote brave behaviors are going to pay off. And I also know that we're generally speaking safe in this situation. But I also know that kind of scary stuff could happen. So for instance, I was in a situation, I think Carson is my puppy. I think she was younger. I think she was probably 4 months of age, but like I said, I start this early. There's a log and there's some blackberry brambles like just past the log, and there were really good plump, like ripe for the picking blackberries on this bush. And my other dogs know how to pick blackberries and eat them. So my other dogs are kind of showing her, like, this is what we do. The log's a little wobbly. So like, could she fall? Sure. If she fell, would the blackberries kind of hurt? Yeah, they would. Also, no one's going to die. this is not actually dangerous. And if you get on that log and you balance and you reach into the prickly bushes, you get these blackberries. And I'm just standing back and watching. I'm just letting her natural curiosity come out. I'm letting the fact that I think dogs learn really well from each other come out. So my other dogs are doing it. She gets on, it wobbles. She's like, ah, it's too scary. She jumps off. She thinks about it. She gets back on. And eventually she's like fully balanced, reaching in, picking these blackberries. And I'm going, okay, check, like good experience. That's the kind of experience I want for them to have. And once you are aware of looking for those experiences, you will find them. Like people are like, well, blackberries don't grow where I live. And I'm like, cool. that doesn't actually matter. But things like falling into water,
yeah.
Like we've got a serene little patch of water, and I know that nothing in the water is going to eat you. And I know that, you know, the river's not going to take you away. Like I'm letting you figure out that rocks are slippery and that if you slip on them and fall in the water, you won't like it. But that the overarching experience here is positive for you because you're a dog and you like being in nature and you like to be with the other dogs and you're exploring and you're having fun. And if I don't have other dogs, then it's just on me to go wading into the water and to just be that for them and just help them to learn how brave they are and how cool it is that they can use their bodies to do all kinds of things. And like border collies mature physically really fast versus like if I had a Newfoundland puppy, like I'm not putting them in the same situations because they are just going to fall and learn to do nothing. So it is this really careful balancing act of what do I think you're ready for? What do I think the payout here is going to be? Because it isn't going to be food. Like it's not food from me that's teaching you how to be brave. And what do I, and is this scenario as safe as I think it can be? Because nothing is actually safe, right? And putting them in those kinds of situations and getting outside of being in nature is basically to me the best way to do it. It's really hard to manufacture similar experiences without going outside and being in nature. I also really let them be scared of something and have a freak out about something if it's safe. So another good example would be you're walking your puppy, maybe long line and harness, like you're out and about in the world and they see tractor and they're like, the tractor's off and it's just sitting there and nothing's going on. They're like, that's a monster. Or even I have a video of another border collie puppy I raised seeing a construction sign, but it just had never been there before. And he's like, ah, that's pretty bad. And me going, okay, I know that relatively this is a safe situation. You aren't going to climb to the top of the tractor. That's not who you are. Because you're worried about it. They're not worried at all is when you want to actually put a little bit more control on the situation. And so I'm just going to stand back and watch you figure out that this is not a big deal. Because if you're over here screaming at it and I start clicking and treating or trying to make this a training scenario, I prove to you that you're right. This is a big deal. How many puppies have you known or adolescent dogs, especially have you known that see themselves in the mirror and they freak out about it? So a puppy sees himself in the mirror and they're usually like, huh, weird. Adolescent dog sees himself in the mirror. I had a client years and years ago who had like an 18-month-old border collie, and he was starting to, he was an intact male, and he was starting to, you know, pound his chest and be a jerk. And he saw a dog, he saw himself in a mirror, and he was like, bah, 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 like, whoa, big aggressive display. And the guy went straight into the look at that game. And I went, dude, what are you doing? And he's like, well, he's freaking out. I was like, yeah. And also, there's a reason for him to freak out. Like, and he, you know, he got a little defensive. He's like, well, he's gonna break the mirror. I was like, no, he isn't. And also, if he does, whatever. Let him figure out how stupid he is. Yeah. Just take his leash off. And he like charged the mirror again, and he was like, duh. And then he was like, huh, And then he like sheepishly sniffs the ground and like walks away, like, JK, didn't mean to. And I was like, that's the experience. The experience you want him to have is that he's dumb. That's not real. That's not a real threat. I want them to go, this is a threat. Oh, I was stupid about that. Actually, it's not a threat. I want them to have that experience as many times as possible. And so a lot of it is just having kind of a big life with your dog and then letting, like, actually observing and responding to what's going on rather than trying to go, you know, like this, the poor guy with the border collie charging himself in the mirror that went in to look at that game. That's because that was a tool in his tool belt that he has used other times with previous reactive dogs. And he went, you know, the math problem he did was dogs having a reaction go into look at that, right? Like, that was the math problem he did. Whereas like the math problem he needed to do was like, is this safe or not? It is. Can I let this dog learn from the environment that that behavior is just not the right behavior? Yes, I can. Always do that if you can. Right.
So in the tractor experience, you broke up a little bit. So in the tractor experience, it's off, it's sitting there. You feel like it's safe for the dog to explore. You're walking down the street and a big truck comes and the dog starts to freak out and you go, okay, we're not going to put you in that situation again, right?
Yeah, especially if the truck is moving. The truck is going to be gone in 2 seconds. You don't have any time to deal with it anyway. Mm-hmm. Just survive it when it's gone. When it, you know, like, let's say it's literally, I'm walking down the street with my puppy. A garbage truck comes barreling down the street. They're not stopping. They're not picking up trash. They're just going. It is loud. The puppy's like, ha. These are situations where I'm going to physically remove the dog if possible. Like, if I can dart between two houses and just get away from it for a second, I do. If I can't, I'm going to make sure that the dog is restrained enough to not flail and freak out and maybe pull a leash out of my hand. Like, I'm going to secure us. And then once it is gone, I'm kind of keeping us in whatever situation we're in until the dog comes down a little bit. So like, let's say in that scenario, I've got my puppy. If it was Carson, that kind of thing would scare her right now. So if I were in, which is why I don't put her in those situations, but let's say I was on a street walking her, truck is coming. They're not slowing down. She's going, ha, scary. If I look to my left and I can squeeze between these two houses right quick, we're going to do that. I'm just going to facilitate her escape because that's what she would like. If I can't, like, let's say it's a city street and I'm looking at a brick wall to my left, I'm going to run my hand down, put my hands on her. I'm going to probably scoop my hand through the collar, put my other hand around her. Like, I'm just going to go, we got this. I'm going to squeeze her to my body. As soon as it's gone, I'm going to take a deep breath. I'm not going to just immediately let her go. I'm going to take a deep breath. I'm going to wait for her to take a deep breath. Then I'm going to let go. She's going to immediately turn and look and want to look and see that it went. I'm going to let her. She's going to dismiss it. She's going to do a shake off. And then we're going to walk on. And I'm going to go, wow, that was stupid of me to walk down this street with a 9-month-old puppy. And I'm not going to do it again.
I love that.
But what I'm not going to do is pull out my food and try to make this better with food, because I'm not going to make it better with food. And I'm potentially going to damage the relationship between the food and the dog and I, mm-hmm. which is one that I hold very precious. I need the dog to 100% of the time believe that a triangular situation between me and them and food is a good thing. And when I try to bring food into a situation to mend the situation, I cause harm to that relationship. So I don't do it.
Yeah. And it runs really counter to a lot of common advice we hear in our corner of the dog training world.
It does. It does. And I have been in this corner of the dog training world a really long time. And so certainly there was a time when I would have tried to immediately bring food into that situation. It is not from learning from others that I have changed my mind about that. It's from learning from, I'm just not happy if things didn't go well. Like, I'm just, to my own detriment, a perfectionist. And so if I brought out food, like let's say exact same scenario, and I try to feed her while the truck goes past and she refuses food, because she will, by the way, because she's scared, I am going to take that as a really, really big deal, a much bigger deal than I think a lot of people would, because people go, well, she's scared, of course. But as soon as she like started to calm down, she did eat. So yay. And I would go, no, because the pattern of I offer you food and you refuse it, that's not a behavior that I want to practice from me or her. I want her to know for sure when I offer her food, it's a good idea for her. And if I offer her food as this monster is barreling past, do I have good ideas? Remember that thing about me trying to prove to them that I have good ideas? That's a terrible idea. Why would we eat right now? Right? Like if we're walking in the airport and there's like a bomb threat over the loudspeaker and they're like, everybody needs to blah, blah, blah. And like, I go, yeah, but Emily, we'll do that. But like, I really need to grab a Bloody Mary first at this bar. When like our history, perhaps, is at a Bloody Mary at the airport. And so I'm like, no, that's what I want to do. I think we'll make everyone feel better right now. And you're going, are you okay? They said there's a bomb threat. Like a Bloody Mary makes no one feel better right now. You know, when we get the Bloody Mary is after the bomb threat has been resolved, we both feel safe again. Now we go. Now we really enjoy that Bloody Mary. We probably get a double and then we go get on the plane. Like it's, that's how I want to treat the food. I do not bring the food out when there's a threat.
That's really a good way to think about it. Yeah. Like if someone offered me a Snickers bar in the middle of something completely terrifying,
yeah, and I'd be like, you might what? Like, a, yeah, totally. Yeah. And I think we do it to them all the time and we get away with it because a lot of dogs really like food. And so they will eat in some of those situations, or we feel better the second they start eating. So like if I held on to her, the truck passed and then she immediately started eating, I might be able to trick myself into thinking I did a good job here because she's eating now. But it is the results, you know, it is next time something like this happens, what do I see? Is she better or worse or the same? It's the results that tell me that food in that situation didn't change anything, but the other things that I did maybe could have.
Stay tuned for part two of this episode coming up soon. If you liked this episode, don't forget to rate and review. It helps other folks like you find the show. Thanks to Mike Pesci for the original music and James Eade of Be Heard for production. For show notes and transcripts, visit podtotherescue.com. Let us know what you think about this episode on social media. We're at Pod to the Rescue on Facebook and Instagram, and we love connecting with listeners. We'll catch you next time on Pod to the Rescue. Oh, and tell your dog we said hi.